So we are talking about faithfulness. Last week, we talked about God's faithfulness, about the certainty that we have that God is going to be faithful. And we left the question hanging, how then ought we to be faithful to God? So we said this is a relationship. We said this is God seeking relationship with his people. And faithfulness is a relationship word. It is about the way those in a relationship act the way they ought to toward each other. How they treat the one they're in a relationship with. And while relationship with God may not be exactly like the human relationships that we might think of, I think that as we're talking about this idea of faithfulness, I think we can make some comparisons. I think we can take some of the ways that we treat those we care about and the ways that we feel about the way we are treated in those relationships. I think we can use those feelings and those actions to inform how we can properly be faithful in our relationship with God. And so this week, I put it out there. This is what we're studying. We're going to look at how can we be faithful. And so I said, well, I said this is what we're going to be doing. This is what we're going to be doing. So I'm in a corner now. I have to make sure we do this. So I'm starting to list some things off. I'm working, and I'm trying to come up with the best ways that we can be faithful to God. And I discovered that my list ended up looking a lot like some of the definitions of faithfulness that we looked at last week. So if you remember, we talked about a few of the big ideas with faithfulness in the relationship between God and his people last week. And one of those big ideas was loyalty. When the Bible talks about faithfulness, especially, I think, in the Old Testament, this idea comes across a lot. The idea of being loyal as you're being faithful comes out frequently. We see sometimes being brought up because God's people are not being loyal. They are not acting faithfully and loyally. We see sometimes where they completely turn and go after other things, other gods. We've read those stories. We read through Kings and Chronicles, and we celebrate when somebody like Hezekiah comes along and sets the people straight and does his reforms and turns the people the right way, and he acts so faithfully. Remember, he's one of those six that said walked faithfully with God. Hezekiah comes on and faithfully does his job as king and leads his people to the point that, remember, the Assyrians were turned away. Sennacherib had surrounded Jerusalem. And I know we've talked some about this history before, where Kings and Chronicles and Isaiah says that they had surrounded the city, and then the Lord made them leave. And historians questioned this, so there's no way that happened. And then they discovered the Sennacherib cylinder, where he's bragging about all the things that he did. And laid siege to this city and destroyed it, and this city and destroyed it. Laid siege to Jerusalem, shut Hezekiah up like a bird in its cage, and then we left. And so we saw the results of the faithfulness of Hezekiah. We get excited, the good, they're getting it. And then his son Manasseh completely turns people the other way. Manasseh probably turns, probably is... There's no good grammar way of saying this. His badness was worse than the goodness of Hezekiah. I know, that was terrible. Think of it, if Hezekiah was two thumbs up, Manasseh was three thumbs down. Okay, maybe that works. Let's just move on. So we see, even when we get excited, we think they're going to get it figured out, it so quickly turns around. And we see that loyalty is not there. But I think those times are a little easier to separate ourselves from. I think it's easier when we look at this whole nation went and worshipped another god and about Yahweh. You know, by the time Josiah comes, copy of the law and don't even recognize it. I think we said that us can't really put ourselves in those shoes. And those times we have fully turning away, at least I hope we don't have too much experience with that. But that's not the only type of loyalty problems that we see in the Bible. That's not the only type of loyalty issues that we see with God's people. It's easy to point out when these people were worshiping God and they stopped doing that and now they're worshiping this God. It's easy to say they have gone the wrong way. What maybe wasn't as easy to see, at least for the people at the time, was when they continue worshiping God and bring in some other things. This is a fancy word that we use called syncretism. I don't know if you've heard of syncretism before. Syncretism, I guess the actual definition is, you know, the mixing of two types of belief, the mixing of two kinds of faith and worship. This is what I like to call God and. What do you worship? I worship God and so we see in some of the prophets the problem not being that they are ignoring the worship of God. If you go to Amos, let's go to Amos chapter 5. Amos is talking to a bunch of people who think they're okay. They think that when the prophet shows up, that must be good news for us. Because, hey, I'm giving my tithe. I'm bringing my sacrifices. I'm going to the temple. I'm doing the things I'm supposed to do. And Amos sets them up. Amos talks about all these nations that are getting it wrong. Nation after nation is getting it wrong. And talks about seven of them. And I guess that was a formula for speaking at the time. You think it's bad listening to a three-point sermon. Apparently they did 7 points, a complete number, right? And on the seventh, so that's the one I really want to talk about. And so they get done with seven, and they still haven't mentioned that they were in the clear. And then he says, but I really want to talk about Israel. And so he talks to them, and they thought they were doing just fine. Because they were doing proper worship. They were worshiping God. They were going to the temple and bringing their sacrifices. If you go to Amos chapter 5, start in verse 18. Woe to you who long for the day of the Lord. Why do you long for a day, the day of the Lord? The day will be darkness, not light. Now, this next verse Don brought up in class a couple weeks ago, we had a good chuckle at the image put here. Picture this. It'll be as though a man fled from a lion only to meet a bear. As though he entered his house and rested his hand on the wall only to have a snake bite him. Will not the day of the Lord be darkness, not light, pitch dark, without a ray of brightness? And you have to imagine the confusion here. But we're doing the right things. He talks about those things. I despise your religious feasts. I cannot stand your assemblies. Even though you bring me burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. Though you bring choice fellowship offerings, I will have no regard for them. Away with the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the music of your harps. He says, I'm not going to look at what you bring. When he talks about that regarding offerings, if you're familiar with some of the language in Leviticus, it says that offerings are a pleasant aroma to God. So literally what he says, he has no regard for them. He says, you're not going to smell it. He said, I'm not looking at it. I'm not smelling it. You sing, I'm not going to hear it. You get a picture of God, just, you know, sensory deprivation. I'm not, nothing. I don't want it. You bring this worship, but I don't want it. Why? He said, let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. He says, you're doing the things that I've asked you to do, and you are also doing some things that I certainly did not ask you. They are showing that while they show value for God, they show maybe more value for profit. Not profit. Profit. That'll make sense on the recording, I'm sure. They care more about making their lives comfortable. They care more about the bottom line. Care more about making money off of their neighbor. I don't think syncretism is just I think that definition of the mixing of two worships or the mixing of two ideas like that, I don't know if that is maybe as clear as what we see in the text. I think maybe a better definition of syncretism and the problem of that kind of mixing, it's not just I'm worshiping here and then I worship here. Look, I'm worshiping two things. Syncretism, the lack of loyalty and faithfulness, is treating other things the way that you should only treat God. It's giving other things, other people, other sometimes beings, sometimes ideas, and acting toward those things in the ways that we should only act toward God. Jesus talked about this, right? Can't serve two masters. Can't serve God and money. If we are to be truly faithful, we don't treat God as just one of the things that we value. We don't go with God and. And sometimes we don't even realize that we're doing it. Sometimes we don't even realize what we're saying. I was talking with a good friend recently. A good man, good family. We were talking about church, and he said, yeah, my wife said we really should try going to church more often. But there's only so much time. And there's only so many good months for going out camping. And we had rain all spring. We just couldn't get out. And so I told her, yeah, that'd be good. We really should. Let's load up the camper and go. I feel certain that didn't sound the same to him that it did to me. And I think sometimes we end up saying these things like yes, of course, God. Praise God. Going to go to church. Man, there's just not enough time and I need to do. And we give that time that we ought to give to God to other things. For him, it's camping. Maybe you found yourself in those spots. Syncretism is a fancy word with a definition that sounds an awful lot like something we don't come anywhere near. We're not worshiping two things. But that idea of God and, it's tricky. Jesus says you can't serve two masters. You can try, but your loyalty is going to come out. So if we're going to be faithful to God, we need loyal faithfulness. And if you remember from last week, the next one that I talked about was trustworthy faithfulness. Maybe we call it honest faithfulness. If we're to be trustworthy, then that means we do what we say we're going to do. You know, we make a lot of statements. I think especially those of us who have the opportunity to get up and pray in front of the congregation and speak in front of the congregation, we say a lot of things that we know we ought to feel, we know we ought to do. It's a big responsibility if we're going to say those kinds of things. Now, I've found it interesting over my years of being in churches and observing things that when we baptize someone, I've thought at times that we make it kind of easy for the person up there. We kind of give them a lot of... The person who's going to be doing the baptizing does a lot of talking and makes a lot of statements. And sometimes I've thought, maybe we ought to let the person who's being baptized make more of a statement than just yes. Or just... answer a tougher question than who is Jesus? I've thought that at times, and I've thought some more about it. If I put myself back to when I was the one listening to all the talking and giving the short answer, which is basically the same short answer that everybody gives, because we've been told that's the answer. If I had been asked to make a bigger statement, I wonder what that would have sounded like then, and I wonder what that would have looked like now, looking back to it. I think the grammar worked out in that sentence. I think now, just like I know Rachel and I have talked about this, and maybe a lot of other couples have as well, saying, what I said in my wedding vows, when I said I loved you that day, I think about from then to now, I say, I had no idea what I was talking about then. I use the same words, but it means something more now, right? You grow in that. I wonder if I had made any grand statements and vows and promises on the day of my baptism, who knows if I would look back and say, I didn't get it then. I don't know. And I was 16. I was maybe older than some who grew up in the church. It matters to God that we do what we say we're going to do. If we're going to be faithful, if we're going to be trustworthily faithful, it matters. And sometimes that means just do it instead of saying you're going to do it. Now, sometimes we see the positive examples in the Bible of somebody who said they're going to do something and did it. You know, think of Hannah. Hannah was praying for a child. And if you look at the beginning of 1 Samuel, how fervently she was praying. And she said, if you give me a son, I will dedicate him to you. She gave birth to Samuel. Good name for a baby. And she followed through. That's a good example. David said, I am going to build a temple. And God said, I didn't ask for a temple. You don't need to promise me a temple. He said, I'm promising you a temple. And David is seen very positively for following through on having his son do that. It worked out. David said he's going to do something, and he did it. And he is blessed for that, and his memory is blessed. On the other hand, you have Jephthah from the book of Judges. If you're familiar with that, he made a promise. I'm going to sacrifice or dedicate to God the next thing that comes through the door. I don't know why he said it. Later he wishes he hadn't. His daughter comes through the door. And we don't have the time to get fully into that story and his implications, but we see God says, do what you say you're going to do. Again, Jesus talks about not making vows in certain situations. We were talking about some of this with Jared the last couple weeks. He's been having some issues with sneaking and stealing and not listening. And so we talked to him and he says, I promise, promise, promise. I don't need you to promise, promise, promise. Just say something and do it so we can believe you. Again, I'm not getting into that one either too much. Well, you talk to him about let your yes be yes and your no be no. So you don't need a promise, promise, promise for me to know that you're going to do what you're going to do. Or Jesus talks about the problem of somebody making a vow, promising to give this money to the Lord, which sounds good, but you already promised that to support your parents. So don't make that promise. You already made a promise with that. You said you're going to do something. If you say you're going to do something, do it. Don't change it just because you think it sounds better. You know, Brian keeps the books here. He'd probably like if we put $200 in extra in the plate. He probably wouldn't like if I told him it was the money that we told the boys they can spend on vacation as we leave later today. A good thing, when you find out more about it, not so good. You make a promise, you keep it. If we are going to be faithful to our God, who is faithful to us, we do what we say we're going to do. Sometimes that means be careful about what you say you're going to do. Sometimes that means don't promise the moon to everybody. Sometimes that means step back, think about what you're actually capable of doing, think about what actually needs to be done, figure out where the overlap there is, and then say what you're going to do. Or just go do it. God wants us to be faithful. He doesn't want our words. He wants our actions. And since we're on action, we said the last area that we really see in the Bible about faithfulness is service. Good and faithful servant. Right? And, you know, service has a lot of ideas attached to it. Sometimes we don't like the idea of being someone's servant. You know? How many parents have said it to children as they're cleaning up the living room? I'm not your servant. But I think we understand doing service for God. I think we understand service within a relationship. Service isn't being someone's slave or servant necessarily. Service is putting the needs of another before your own needs. Service means taking care of what needs to be done for someone that you care about or in a relationship with. When we look at the gospel story and we read about the aftermath and the stories of the people involved, from the traditions that we have, 11 out of the 12 apostles, 12 out of the 13, if you want to count Judas, died because of that message. died because of that gospel. Peter, Andrew, James, and John could have had a nice long life of catching fish. It would have been just fine for themselves. But they felt called to do something. They felt it was more important to bring that message to the world. We still see that with missionaries today. I know everybody does things for their own reasons, but I don't know how often you've talked to a missionary and asked why they do it, and they said, I just really wanted to travel. Doesn't happen too much. It's something they felt called to do as a service. I don't feel that calling. It's not that mission work is not something that I have ever been interested in. I even said from a pulpit one time, preaching at filling in at Heritage for Pete Brazel, and they were doing they had just gotten back from their mission in Honduras. They didn't really take a big chunk of the congregation and do work in Honduras. And I said to the elder in charge of that, I love what you're doing. When you're putting the group together next year, don't ask me. But it is a good example of putting somebody else's needs, whether that is the needs of those who are being served or the needs of Christ to spread that word. Faithful service matters. And you don't have to leave the country. You don't have to leave the town. There are all kinds of things that we are able to do that may not be because it's our favorite hobby, but because we are faithful to our God. And we find ways to serve. And so, loyal faithfulness, trustworthy faithfulness, faithful service. We ended last week asking, what can we do to be faithful to God? And the steps sounded a lot like the steps last week. And we're going to end this morning very similarly to where we ended last week. Why is it that we take the time to make sure we are being loyal and trustworthy and serving in our faithfulness? And it comes down to where we were at the end last week. Hebrews 10, verse 23. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. We act faithfully because we are certain that God will. God is faithful. Always. So the only question this morning is, will we be? I think we know how. I think we want to. I think we're working toward it. But it's a lifelong commitment. It's something that we must continue to work on, just like those human relationships. So, that's faithfulness. That's what we're going to look at. In 2 weeks, we're going to get into a similar, slightly different topic of faith. I hope that that's something in this speaks to you. I know I've appreciated getting some time with this. Not just looking at some of the heroes, not just looking at the Davids and the Daniels and the ones who go full speed giving their service, not just those that we see as a great example, but trying to ask, what am I doing? What have I done? What have I said I was going to do? Have I done it? I think these are some of the questions we need to ask ourselves. But this morning, if there's anything you need, if you haven't made that commitment and need baptism this morning, what a great time. I joked last week about heading out as soon as Amen said. We'll stick around if we need. If there's anything you need this morning, we want to hear. This is family time. Come forward as we, once again, stand and sing.
Would you live for Jesus and be always pure and good? Would you walk with Him within the narrow road?